Well, greetings to all our viewers. I'm Yvonne Katsande. Thank you so much for joining me. Today, we speak of a story that I have been giving you updates, in actual fact, almost every now and again, every week, because of what is happening on a daily basis. Let's talk about the global NATO, obviously pioneered by the British Empire, who are literally warmongers who have refused peace between Russia and Ukraine. And we've often asked the question, why are they really interested in this war? For what benefit and for what purpose? But you know, over the years, over the months, we've seen a lot of developments of what has happened in Ukraine itself. And then when President Donald Trump came into power, we also heard what his take was when it comes to Ukraine and the deal that he had with Ukraine. But I think the biggest concern has been, what will Russia's reaction be? Now, I have said it time without number. It has been the most amazing thing how Russia has not responded aggressively. And yet they could have. I mean, we're talking about a powerhouse here. It will literally just take a day or two for Russia to completely obliterate Ukraine if they really wanted to. So I think Russia has really shown a lot of maturity and the willingness to actually go and sit at the table and speak about peace and, in actual fact, come up with a peace plan. But perhaps things have gone a little bit too further. Just a few days ago, we heard Tulsi Gabbard coming out to actually speak about how a possible nuclear war can just break out. Because Ukraine and the global NATO keep poking the bear. I mean, Russia has really, really been calm about it. It has been amazing. In fact, every day I kept on asking, why is President Putin actually not doing what we think he could do? But like I said to you earlier on, it really showed a great level of maturity, if anything, a great level of maturity. And I must say, I do give it to President Putin for having reacted in the way that he has. But now we are where we are, where Ukraine, I don't know who is advising Zelensky at this point in time, but he seems to be so unreasonable and so determined to attack Russia. I don't know how he thinks he can even, he can even win this war with Russia. It's impossible. Even from us just looking from the sidelines, it's practically impossible for Ukraine to ever think of winning this war. But anyway, I have a special guest today who's going to help me delve more into this topic. We need to take a look at what is happening, not only just between Ukraine and Russia, but Europe at large. And let's talk about global NATO and its influence pushing this war, the warmongers, the war perpetrators. What is the end game? Who is financing it? And why do we have this going on, especially at this time? Now, my guest is not a new person on the block of politics and even, you know, analysis of geopolitics. We're talking about Alexander Dugin. Now, he's actually known as a Putin whisperer. Why? Because he has been very firm about what his ideology is when it comes to Russia and what Russia stands for. He has written so much material that even President Biden had to ban his books. And I had a good laugh, you know, when I heard that President Biden didn't want Alexander Dugin's material in the United States. So I say, what could it be that is in these books that President Biden and his administration are actually not interested? They're trying to silence it. But Alexander joins me today via King's Conference, King's Call, and he's actually in Moscow right now. Alexander Dugin, Doctor of Sociology and Political Science. He also holds a PhD in philosophy. He is also the founder of the Russian Geopolitical School and the Eurasian Movement.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, you know, I had a lot to say. I couldn't even have said it all if I wanted to, but a lot is going on. And I just spoke about the global NATO and what is happening between Ukraine and Russia. I know there's a history to it, but where we are right now, we seem to have warmongers and war perpetrators from the British Empire who really don't want to see peace going on between Russia and Ukraine. Why is it like that?
So first of all, we could explain that on multiple levels. So the conflict between Russia and the global West should be put in the historical context. First of all, we could explain that very well with geopolitics. Geopolitics, I remind our viewers, that was a kind of science, political science, introduced precisely by British imperialists, by Halford Mackinder, who had defined the global goals for the British Empire in the future, and he tried to explain what was the great game between British Empire and Russian Empire was in the past. So that was a kind of attempt to summarize relations on the global levels and to explain hostility, permanent hostility between England and Russia. So, and he has, in order to make some theory based on that, that will help to explain that, he has developed geopolitics as a science. And geopolitics affirms that there are two opposite civilizations, the sea power, represented by Great Britain and now by USA or collective West, and land power, represented now by Hotland, by Eurasia, by Russia. And that was the case more or less the same 100 years ago, 200 years ago. That is the permanent geopolitical basis. And according to Mackinder, who was the high commissar of the Entente during the First World War, and when he was sent to the White Army, his mission was to separate Ukraine precisely from Russian Empire and fight against Bolsheviks who tried to get the control over this organical part of the global Russia. So he was not only in the theory, he acted as well in the practice during First World War. And he has made this the conceptual map that in order to rule the world, Anglo-Saxons need to encircle Russian heartland and to put the control over Eastern Europe, over Ukraine, Baltic states, Poland, that in his time belonged to Russian Empire. So his idea was to encircle Russia and to establish the control over all the rimlands of the Eurasian continent by Anglo-Saxon allies or colonies or direct power. And that still now is the key to explain what is going on in Ukraine, because after the fall of the Soviet Union, the same Atlanticists, the same sea power tried to get full control over this post-Soviet space, above all on Ukraine. But Ukraine hesitated until the last moment. Ukraine hesitated between Russia and Global West. And finally, the Global West, CIA, MI6, they have made, with the help of Soros and his networks, a coup 2014 in order to put into the power the group of people totally devoted to the Global West and totally in favor of this sea power, Anglo-Saxon world. And that was the beginning of the modern conflicts. But Putin tried, as you have pointed very well, to avoid direct confrontation. He was inclined to have the talks, to have some agreements, and he has declared Russians red line, and all these red lines were overcome by the Global West. So the war followed. So I think now that the main geopolitical explanation of what is going on, it is precisely about that. But we need to take in consideration the new balance of power that came into the reality of the fall of the Soviet Union. There was the kind of global domination, global hegemony of the collective West. So sea power became universal trying to establish their unique rule over humanity with a global market, with the same individualistic value, with LGBT agenda, with parliamentary democracy, liberalism, individualism, yeah. materialism. So Anglo-Saxon wanted to conquer the world on global scale, and Russia was an obstacle. So they have put together geopolitical explanation and their will to the global hegemony in order to crush any kind of resistance. And Russia was the last obstacle on their way to global dominance.
I find it very interesting, though, how Russia has been, it always seems like Russia has always been isolated from the European countries. And one question I would often ask is that, do you actually feel like you're still part of Europe, being Russian? Because it seems like it's Russia and Europe. What's your take on that?
So, I belong to the tradition of Russian philosophers who always considered Russia to be particular Eurasian civilization. Not just the part of the Europe, not just the part of the West, but rather independent, autonomous, sovereign civilization with some part of the common heritage with the West, but at the same time very original, very particular, and who has taken many elements from the Eastern societies, Eastern civilizations. So I think Russia is not the part of the Europe or global West, and Russia is special, unique Eurasian civilization. But I think at the same time, that does not mean that we should always and natural to be in the conflict with the West. We just want multipolarity. We want kind of respect for our particularity and originality from the West. We defend ourselves. We are not offensive. We don't try to impose our own rules on the Europe or other humanity. We respect the differences, but it seems that the West doesn't respect our claim to be sovereign at all. For them, our insistence that we are particular civilization, that we need to enforce and not to abdicate, to abandon our sovereignty, they consider that as a kind of challenge. So I think that we are now in Ukraine and elsewhere, we are on defensive. We're trying to save ourselves and to save, to secure our independence. And that is not against anybody. In that sense, we support absolutely the claim of other civilizations to insist on their independence and sovereignty. That is why our contacts with Africa, for example, are growing, because we consider Africa in general, and Southern Africa as more radical, more advanced country of African continents, as the logical, natural ally, because we want you to become totally independent from everybody, including from us. We are friends, but we wish you to become more and more independent and sovereign in any senses. So that is our general idea. Let us to be Russian, let Africans to be Africans, Muslims to be Muslims, Chinese to be Chinese, Indian to be Indian, Latin Americans to be Latin American, and to proceed their way through the history. And that goes absolutely against the plans of globalists, of this Anglo-Saxon imperialist hegemonic elites. So why they hate us, why they hate Putin, and why they prohibit my books on Amazon, as was in the case of Biden administration.
Oh, well, definitely that has created some enemies for you. Now, looking at what you've just said, Europe and then Russia, I want to go into the issue of religion a bit, which you touch on in one of your books. I was reading your books, your material. When I was in Russia, I got the sense that Christianity is still very much respected in Russia, right? Christians, allowed to preach the gospel freely without having been, persecuted for it. Then I also picked up that, you know, you've also maintained a culture, very conservative of your culture. Like, for example, you do not allow all this LGBTQ agenda in the country. In actual fact, that is a crime in its own. And a whole lot of the other things that most European countries love. You know, they've been funding and they love, and Russia is saying, no, we don't want this. Could this also be the reason why, specifically, you would have such enemies like the Biden administration, banning your books, and people can't even buy your books on Amazon because you speak about religion and you speak about your culture and you don't want it diluted by people like the Pride people who have this LGBTQ agenda? Because I noticed that it was a very strong point when you're in Russia.
So you're absolutely correct. First of all, we need to start to explain that there is the different kind of Christianity. And our Orthodox Christian church was continuation of the original church. And the Catholic Church, and above all, the Protestantism, they were a kind of scission, of division, of just separation from this main line of Christianity. We tried to save Christianity as it was in the beginning, the original Christianity, and we tried to save, to conserve this ancient Christian faith in all the traditions, and the West followed the other way. First of all, there was Catholic Church separating from Orthodox Church. After that, there was Protestantism and secular modernity, anti-Christian type of society has gained the power in the Enlightenment in the West. So now the Western culture has gone long away from the original Christianity, and we Russians, we still try to conserve, to keep, to guard the same ancient Christian ideas, because in our opinion, church, it is not about the past. The church, it is about eternity. And the modernity, Western modernity, has opted in favor of time, of modernization, of the progress, and they have abandoned their Christian values. Hence, this LGBT guys, this so-called progressivism and materialism and post-humanism and feminism, they try to destroy our basis, cultural. And we, on the contrary, we try to keep that, to save that. And the abyss between Russian traditional society, Russian Orthodox Christianity, and the Western post-Christian and anti-Christian world, this abyss is growing, and our confrontation becomes more and more radical, because it is not about the territory, about the some earths, some resources, some spaces, but it is about the principles. So we are fighting in Ukraine the war on the behalf of the tradition against this godless modernity represented in the collective West.
So what is your take, though, on the emerging of a multipolar world? How does this affect the geopolitics of the world at large, especially with what's playing out right now, not only between Russia and Ukraine? We're also looking at what's happening in the Middle East. We have Israel, and just recently the developments with Iran, it, you know, pushes back all the way to Syria. We're even seeing Africa, which you commented on, which is emerging very strong, especially with your ties to the Sahel region and other parts of Africa. What's your comment on a multipolar world?
So, first of all, I have introduced the concept of distributed heartland 10 years ago when Trump, for the first time, came to the power. I have remarked that we need some new revision of the geopolitics, because the classical geopolitics was based on the bipolar vision. So there is the global west, there is the heartland represented by Russia, and this land power is in fight against sea power, and that's all. Multipolarity, emerging powers, new emerging poles, for example, Africa, Islamic world, India, China, Latin America, they represent a kind of challenge to reconsider the classical laws of geopolitics. And I have proposed the idea of distributed heartland. What that means? That geopolitically, multipolarity should be considered as the group of the heartlands, not only one heartland, but few heartlands. For example, Russian heartland, Chinese heartland, Indian heartland, Islamic heartland, represented precisely, first of all, by Iran, but as well by traditional Islamic world. African heartland, represented by South Africa and Ethiopia and Mali and Burkina Faso, those countries who show more than anybody else the will to be independent, to create Pan-African unity, to defend the proud of the African civilization. We totally support that. African heartland is forming under our eyes. So as well the Latin American heartland. So, and what is most important, I think, that there is the heartland inside of United States, and Trump represented and tries still to represent this American heartland. He was supported by those in the United States who share the traditional values, who doesn't want to go in the liberal way as the cost. So there is the inner geopolitics, and I think that in that sense, there is now the global war between geopolitics of unipolar world of the global hegemony of the West against this emerging multipolarity. It is not just return to the bipolar world as was in the middle of the 20th century. That is something totally new, and that represents the chance as well for African civilization, African continent, to reaffirm its dignity, its sovereignty, its independence. But I think that first of all you need to form a kind of general staff of Pan-African integration based on this multipolar vision, and to give the frame for this African heartland, as well as we do now in Russia, promoting Eurasianism, theory of multipolar world. I have written some books on that. I'm making now at Moscow University of Foreign Affairs the course on the theory of multipolarity. So the same initiatives are beginning in China and India. So I think we need to expand this multipolar world vision, multipolar philosophy as well in other parts of the world. And yeah, I would greatly appreciate it if there's something like that would start in Africa.
Wow. Okay. So now like I said, I have read a lot of your books, actually, you know, understanding the ideology that you're pushing out there, and how you actually view Russia. So you have been termed a Putin whisperer. Does it mean that President Putin actually has taken some of your ideas into consideration and implemented them?
So first of all, I've tried to identify what is essential in our history, what is essential in our people, in our culture. I always, during all my life, I am concentrated and only one task: to give the voice to my people, to Russian identity, to help to the Russian people and Russian society to express itself. Because We were as well colonized, not like you in Africa in direct way, but we, our mind was colonized by the West. And during the centuries, we dealt precisely with the wrong, not Russian concept. We saw the world with the alien's eyes. And I started from the beginning of the 80s, I started to fight against this. And finally, I think that Putin's logic and the power, it's more or less the same. He tries to regain the Russian sovereignty, not only on the level of the politics, of the economy, of the military, but as well at the level of the philosophy or civilization. And he, in that point, our efforts that were until some moment parallel, they have joined because Putin doesn't want to implement his own political agenda. He is working on the behalf of our history, of our people. I do the same on the level of the philosophy. He is doing politics, I'm doing philosophy. And I think that our paths, they meet in the logic more than in the practical way. So I don't whisper to Putin's ear anything. He understands that by himself. So we are in deep harmony with him without necessity to influence each other, I would say.
Okay, so I guess you do understand each other in a very amazing way, if I must say. Now, going back to what is happening right now with the war, what would have possibly restrained President Putin to actually retaliate against Ukraine? I mean, we just had an assassination attempt on his jet. It's something that was really considered big by a whole lot of media people that were speaking about it, trying to assassinate a whole president of a country. The same thing happened even with President Trump. And this, after Zelensky himself had actually come out stating that they should be assassinated. And then we have an assassination attempt. And still, President Putin is still not really, aggressively attacking Ukraine, of which he had every reason to. What would have really restrained him? I know that you spoke about why he has not been aggressively responding to Ukraine because he believes in the sovereignty of people. But given the gravity of an assassination attempt on him, that could have definitely triggered and changed things.
So I think that Putin now touched much more than this assassination attempt, because we fixed in the recent 3 years so many attempts by Ukrainian special agents to kill Putin. So we have lost the numbers of that. So it is not the first time. So we dealt with that during 3 years. We don't declare that openly. We don't emphasize that. But it is something normal already. We consider Ukraine now the terrorist state, and we could behave ourselves without any restrictions. But there is the only one thing: we don't consider Ukrainian people as our enemy. We consider these people as the part of us ourselves. The Ukrainians in our eyes are not the enemies. They are hostages taken by globalists, taken by Global West, by this terrorist group in Kyiv. So we spare them. So because if for example, we are making some operation to rescue the hostages, we should be very careful how we do that. Because otherwise, their life of these innocent people will be in danger. So I think that is the main reason to our very, very polite behavior in Ukraine, precisely because we consider all of them, all Ukrainians as the part of the same people. They are just taken for the hostages. So I think that Zelensky is a terrorist. He has kidnapped his own people and put it as hostages and try to make the shield of his own people. So that is disgusting. But I think that Russia tries to respect all the rules of international behavior, but as well all the rules to deal with the hostages. Any Ukraine man and woman we consider to be the part of our people, not just enemies, not some allies. They are us, and that is difference. But the Zelensky's regime considers Russian to be enemies, and they have no hesitation to kill civilians, to kill everybody. So that is the difference. We consider them as the part of ourselves, and they consider us under influence of the same globalists' powers to be their enemies. That explains why we behave ourselves very carefully in Ukraine.
In the retaliation. Wow, that's very interesting. Now, what do you think will be the end game of this war? Are we most likely going to have a peace deal anytime soon? President Trump came out saying that he's been speaking to President Putin, hoping for a peace deal. But where are we going? What do you think is going to be the end game? Zelensky is heavily influenced by global NATO at this point in time. Are they even going to have an election in Ukraine? And if not, or if so, then what will that lead to?
So, first of all, I think that Trump wants sincerely to stop the war, but he does not know how to do that. So he tries to impose some vision that is totally unacceptable, neither to us, nor to them, nor to global NATO, nor to globalists, to nobody. So he decides to stop the war. That wasn't his war. That was the war started by his political enemies, by Democrats, by globalists, by Biden, by Victoria Nuland, by Blinken, by those who hate Trump absolutely more than everybody else. So, and that war was as well the part of the strategy against Trump personally. So he sincerely wants to stop it, but he does not know how. And I think that the end game, in that sense, is the only one decision. If Trump get out from supporting Nazi regime in Ukraine as soon as possible, that will lead to the fastest solution of this conflict. So we could afford to fight against European Union, against Ukraine, it would be very easy. What is the real difficulty is to us to fight against the United States of America with all this intelligence, and all this money, all this weaponry that United States have given to Ukraine. With this amount of full-scale participation of United States in this war, we could not solve the problem, because we are fighting precisely against Americans, and Americans are fighting against us. And that is very long story, and that is difficult to overcome in this direct confrontation. And it could lead easily, if Trump continues to do what Biden started, so it easily could come to the nuclear apocalypse, and it is clear. But if Trump step out of this conflict, saying, for example, it is not my war, the United States will not anymore participate in that, the solution will be very, very near, because we could afford full-scale war without using nuclear weapon against European Union if it is needed, or much easier against Ukraine. So the problem is only in one factor. The war still continues because of the United States of America. It is really great power with great financial, technological, military intelligence force and strength. Against that, we could not proceed as soon as we want. But nevertheless, we have already managed to stay against this war with United States during 3 years, under all the sanctions, under all the attacks, all the amount of information of intelligence from the satellites given to Nazi regime in Kyiv. So yeah. we have managed to be able to fight on the equal terms with the United States of America. If United States of America steps out, I think the end will be very, very, very close. An end game will follow, and the end game is the total control over all the territory of Ukraine by Russia and creating there the zone of peace, the zone of friendship, the zone of the neutrality,
yeah,
but without this terrorist group.
Do the Ukrainian citizens actually, support that ideology where Russia would actually overtake the whole of Ukraine? Because that's also been another concern. It seems like some are in agreement, maybe some think otherwise.
So we could tolerate either friendly Ukraine or neutral. So we could accept both, but we could not tolerate hostile Ukraine. And that is the most important essential element. I think the majority of population of Ukraine now are the victim of propaganda, of Nazi propaganda, and we need the kind of process of denazification of the Ukraine. But I think that we could, for example, to assure the freedom of the choice for Ukrainian people, because now they have no choice. There are no elections. There is dictatorship of this terrorist group of Zelensky. So we could give to them the option, the choice to elect, to vote in the free elections to the power they want. But we will have one condition. It should be either friendly to Russia or neutral. It could not be hostile, because we have experienced everything that could happen with the hostile government, radically nationalist, yeah, Russophobic. So we need to secure our own safety there in Ukraine. But I think that we will accept any exit of these free elections without intervention of the West, first of all, no intervention from globalists, from Great Britain, from United States, who have started all this mess. So we need to give to Ukrainian people the real freedom to choose what they want, because now they are taking the hostages. We could not hear what the hostages want or prefer when they are still hostages, when they could be killed, tortured, raped for something, for their own opinion. Now, first of all, we need to liberate Ukraine from this Nazi regime. And after that, after this military, first of all, and political victory, we will give to Ukrainian population the free choice, the possibility to choose what they want. But that should coincide with the global interests of Russia, of all the Eurasian space.
Wow. All right. So now, an interesting question. We have a recent attack by Israel on Iran that has obviously, rattled other powers that be. For example, the United States has come out to say that they were never consulted in the attack. They were against the attack. And then we have a superpower, Russia, who is saying that they would back Iran. So now I was reminded about the prophecy in the Bible, in the book of Revelations, when we speak about the king of the north and how the king of the north is then referred to Russia and how it's going to rise and obviously, you know, take over, invade Israel. As it stands, what is Russia's take on what is happening in the Middle East?
So first of all, I think that that is deadly, deadly blow against Trump, because Netanyahu is followed as well by biblical prophecy. That is the apocalyptic war in the Middle East, because what are the plans of Israel is to create greater Israel or that would precede the coming of Messiah, of Moshiach. And that is precisely the idea that moves Israel, moves Zionists. They want to destroy Alexa Mosque, blow up it, and start to build a third temple. That is openly said now in Israel, and they need to destroy all the Arab Muslim population around them and to invade new territory. And Iran is a kind of obstacle. So, but Iranian vision of the end of time is quite opposite. They consider that the Israel it is Dajjal, the liar, and they try to stop them. They have their own vision of the role of the Zionist regime in Israel. So they try to save the Alexa Mosque from being blown up. And the people around Netanyahu, Smotrich, Bezalel Smotrich, Ben-Gvir, they openly declare they are going to blow that. So that is about the prophecy. And Russia, I agree with you, plays the role that could be considered as the prince of the north, the Gog and Magog.
Yes.
And it is the way how Protestants, American dispensationalists, some evangelicals, how they interpret geopolitics of Russia. So there is a biblical hatred towards Russia. There is the play of two opposite version of the end of the time between Israel and Islam and most active part of Muslim worlds of Shia Iran, and there is the place of Russia. So we could not believe in the Bible, but the Bible is here. So the prophecy are now becoming the reality, and the fight between Israel and Iran has something clearly apocalyptical in it. So the missiles, Iranian missiles, and Israeli drone, they are flying over the Armageddon value indirectly, the geographical meaning. So that is Armageddon. So that is biblical prophecy that is becoming to realize. So I think that African people could as well have his own vision of the end time. So there are the song, very famous, Jerusalem, by South African singer. There are many ideas. This African purple people was the first in our history, and it will be the last as well. So I think that the biblical prophecies, they begin to be fulfilled, and we need to interpret what is going on, not only on the geopolitical basis, but as well using the religious perspective.
Wow. All right. Now, before I actually, you know, conclude on this and I let you go, Africa has a growing liking of Russia right now. We've seen some African leaders that have come out to say, listen, we need protection from you, President Putin, help us out here. It seems a lot of them were choking, but didn't have a place to go. And ever since we now saw the strengthening of relationships with the Sahel brothers and Russia, we have other emerging countries that are now coming out. They don't want to be a part of the French anymore. They're chasing out the French soldiers. They're chasing out all the other West soldiers. They don't want them in their countries. They're seeking for independence. But they are looking to Russia for protection. So will this strengthen ties with Russia and Africa? But my question then will be, as Russia is providing security for Africa, what's in it for Russia? Are you just doing it because out of your good-heartedness? Or obviously you're gaining something. Africa is rich. We have a lot of minerals in Africa.
Yes, I agree with you. I agree with you that there is the growing consciousness of the independence in Africa, in many countries, almost in all countries of the Africa. But I would like to stress one point, emphasize one point, that Russia is not to replace one colonial power by the other. We are not going to exploit Africa. We don't want, we have no idea, no desire to submit Africa, to exploit its resources. We are coming as real friends, creating, building multipolar world order, because the Western power are still in favor unipolar world order, unipolar domination of the West over the rest. And we are going to liberate the rest. It is our mission. We consider our national idea to bring independence, freedom, and peace to the other, not for the change, not for the new form exploitation, not at all. We are absolutely sincere. We are going to help Africa because of the Africa, not because of us. For us, Africa, more Africa is independent, more it will be friendly, and we are ready to give support to African people who is fighting for this, to secure their independence, not in order to replace one dominator, one colonizational power by the other. We never were colonial empire. We had no kilometer of the territory of Africa under our colonial control. Nothing, never. So that is very important. It is not new idea for us to help Africa by the principle, by the mission. It is continuation of our tradition. We helped Africa during Tsarist time, as our great leader, great poet Nikolai Gumilev has dedicated the extremely beautiful poetry to African people. We were in favor of African liberation during Soviet Union, and now with new Russia, emerging Russia as the one of the pole of the multipolar world, we continue just now the same line. We are coming as friends, not as a replacement for the other colonial power, and that is absolutely sincere. It fits in our vision of how the future world should be. It should be based on the real respect and justice, and accepting the other as different, but not in hierarchical way. There, in this multipolar world, there should not be highest and lowest people. We should be all our civilizations, African, Russian, Chinese, Islamic, Western, should be put on the same level. We are equal. So this equality is the kind of the main force that is driven us to help Africa. That is by principle. That is by idea. That is by our own understanding of what is just and what is not.
Oh, wow. That's rather different. That's really rather different, because we're so used to a world whereby there has to be something on the table to exchange. So we give you help, you give us resources. We sign a contract that you have to you know, hold on to for the next 99 years. I mean, it's always, there's always something. There's always something which ends up destroying economies anyway. So if you say that's what Russia's idea of having relationships and ties with Africa, that's rather different. Very different.
Because I think that that was the ideology that was imposed on the humanity by capitalist West.
Absolutely.
So everything is the market.
Yeah.
So we need to put the end to this relation. So it is unhuman to be put on the market. We should have the other values than just market values. So we need to start to be human again, I think. So we need to overcome this greedy capitalist exchange concept and try to find another way to deal with each other.
Oh, wonderful. Now, as I close off, I really thoroughly enjoyed speaking to you. I could speak to you for the whole day. As I actually close off the program today, what message do you have for the Christians around the world? We truly are in the end times, and I know a lot of politicians might take this as if it's a joke, as if it's nothing serious, but these are really biblical prophecies unfolding, like you rightly say so. So what message would you have for Christians worldwide that would be watching this interview, obviously also watching how the geopolitics is playing out in the world? People have so many questions, but I believe strongly in the prophecies of the Bible because I'm Christian too. And I believe what is happening right now is not by coincidence. It was prophesied years ago. So what's your message to the Christians that are watching now?
So first of all, say that the people who are still Christian now, they are real heroes because they have managed to save their religious identity after so many hundred years of the secular propaganda, materialism, atheism. So they are lucky to live until the end time, because now their faith will be compensated. They will be confirmed by the events. So I think that maybe being martyrs in this difficult time, they are lucky, they are happy in spite of all that. And the second point I would like to say that without religion, we could understand nothing. And the modern events, everything is biblical. It becomes biblical once more. And the third point, I would suggest to African people to restore their own local traditions. So those who are Christian, stay Christian. But those who are not, I think the worst thing is materialism, the atheism, the agnosticism.
Yeah.
Because the African traditions, African religions are as well very valuable. So you should not be ashamed of being savage, so-called, or archaic. So defend your faith, defend your traditions, defend your values. Only with that you could become great once more. I would like to see great Africa, religious, spiritual Africa, Christian, if they want, Muslim, but as well African, basically promoting their own religious beliefs and their African faith. Every man, every woman who believes in God, they are closer to each other than those who don't.
Oh, wow. I do look forward to seeing you in Russia. I do look forward to come to Russia, to Moscow again. Beautiful country. I absolutely loved it. So I'll be visiting soon, and hopefully maybe I can catch a cup of tea with you or something.
It was a great pleasure.
It has been such an absolute honor speaking to you. Thank you so much. That was Dr. Alexander Dugin, and he is live in Moscow in Russia telling us about, you know, the ideology of how they view Russia, you know, and obviously the whole geopolitical global NATO war that is playing out, what exactly is going on, what will probably be the end game, and the reasons behind it. So thank you so much for giving us that whole analysis.
So best wishes.
All right. And so to our viewers, thank you for joining me today on the program. We'll continue to give you the updates. You know, the peace talks and the peace negotiations are still ongoing between President Trump and Putin, and hopefully Zelensky will come to his senses and somehow, you know, allow peace to prevail, because Ukraine is seriously not going anywhere with this war. So I'll definitely keep you updated on that. Thank you so much for joining. Goodbye and God bless you.